Mini Break, your daily podcast for the biggest storylines, results, and controversies from the tennis world. Today is Wednesday, April 14th. On today's show, want to talk about the return of the Kings on the ATP Tour, Rafael Nadal and Novak Djokovic kicking off their 2021 clay court campaigns with straight set victories in Monte Carlo. Of course, they weren't the only two playing at the year's first ATP Masters 1000 event on clay. I want to talk about all of Wednesday's action, preview Thursday's matches there as well. There's also WTA event in Charleston. We continue to see young rising next-gen WTA talent have success early here in this clay court season. We'll break down that action. And then I want to touch on a couple of the challenger matches we saw unfold on Wednesday. David Gertler, our Cracked Rackets contributor, I would say our ATP challenger reporter here at CR, joins me on the Great Shot podcast to talk about last week's two events, to recap everything that's happened so far this week and preview what we expect to happen in the rest of the week's action. So that is, you know, very challenger-centric, I would say only challenger-centric podcast if that's the sort of content you're looking for. Be sure to hop on over to our Great Shot podcast feed. But, you know, there are a couple of matches we talked about superficially that I didn't get the chance to dive deep into. This is what the mini break was built for, to take a deep dive into my favorite matches of the day. A couple of them happened at the challenger level. So again, at the end of this podcast, want to spend some time talking about those matches. But of course, the reason we're able to recap everything that happens day in, day out throughout the tennis world is because of the support we get from all of you listeners, because of the support we get from our Cracked Rackets Patreon family, and then sincerely because of the support we get from our friends at Midwest Sports. You guys know the deal by now, so I'll keep it simple. The best gear at the best prices all can be found at MidwestSports.com. You use our promo code CR15, you'll get a pretty cool deal alongside of, obviously an upgrade in your equipment. You'll also let them know that we sent you there, MidwestSports.com. The promo code is CR15. With that in mind, let's get into Wednesday's action because, again, two of our top three players in the ATP rankings kicking off their clay court campaigns. And that's just weird to say since, 2005, the top two players have either been, you know, Djokovic, Nadal, Federer, or Murray. Now Daniil Medvedev's ranked number two in the world. And I'm not saying he hasn't earned that right. I'm just saying it's still weird to wrap my mind around the fact that you see both Djokovic and Nadal in the draw. And they're not just unequivocally the top two seeds. The next gen's inching closer and closer. But of course, entering the clay court season, Rafa's the guy to beat. Djokovic is probably the guy who's most likely, if anyone can beat him, you may say, an informed Dominic Thiem. But of course, that question, can anyone beat Rafa, is something we will certainly be debating over the course of the next 6 weeks. For now, let's just focus on the action in Monte Carlo to start. And let's begin by discussing Novak Djokovic's straight set victory over Jannik Sinner. Sinner, of course, the highest ranked player in the world under the age of 20. Following his run to the final of the Miami Masters, he's now up to number 19 in the world and, you know, certainly has played more matches here in 2021 than Novak Djokovic. Djokovic playing his first match today since winning the Australian Open title, but Djokovic looked awfully good here to kick off his clay court season. And it's worth remembering, and by the way, I feel like I don't talk that frequently about Nadal, Djokovic, Federer outside of when they're competing in the Grand Slams. And respectfully, the reason I don't is because what else is there to add to the conversation? Nadal and Federer have won 20 Grand Slams. Novak Djokovic has won 18. He's won the most Masters of all time, spent the most weeks at number one. I've given my opinion before. I think his best is better than any other men's tennis player I've ever seen on a tennis court. Like, they're awesome. That's the analysis. Anyone who's trying to nitpick their game or say, you know, I actually see a 2.6% decline in the way Djokovic hits through his backhand now, or man, that second serve's a weakness for Djokovic. It's very attackable. It's like all of these things have existed since 2008. And so that's why, you know, again, there's not that much you can learn from a standard Novak Djokovic match that you didn't already know. But the Djokovic-Sinner matchup is a particularly relevant one because we don't have a large sample size of it, because it is a new test being brought up for Novak Djokovic on the ATP Tour. It's also just always interesting to see how Novak Djokovic competes on the clay. Of course, you look at his success on hard courts and grass. You know, he's a five-time Wimbledon champion. He's won 9 Australian Opens. He's won 3 U.S. Opens. He's won countless tour finals and countless Masters events on hard courts. That's why he's the all-time Masters events champion. But you know what else he's really, really fucking good at? Clay court tennis. You look for Novak Djokovic over the course of his career, and just a number for all of you listeners, we did these podcasts back mid-pandemic. I went back in time and looked at the best seasons in ATP history, and traditionally, if you're having an elite of the elite seasons, you're winning at least 80% of your total matches. Usually it's in that 85 to 90% range. The best of the best hit 90. We're talking, you know, 2015 Novak Djokovic or 2006, 2007 Roger Federer, best of the best. But Novak Djokovic for his career, and again, we can just filter out all non-ATP level matches because he's played over 1,000 ATP level matches at this point. He's won 83% of his career matches. He's 944 and 191. By the way, that's freaking nuts. He's 613 and 113 on hard courts, excuse me, an 84% win percentage. You want to look for the grass court number, I suppose. I should have looked that up as well because I'm sure that's going to get impressive. 95 and 18 and 84% win percentage. So those two are nuts. And obviously, given 84, 84, his career is 83, the clay is going to be lower than that. But he's won 80% of his career matches on clay. He's 227 and 56. I'm not going to list all of the titles he's won at the ATP level on clay, but you look in his career in terms of the total amounts of finals he's made at the Masters level. I guess I can just filter it all out at this point. Novak Djokovic in his career, 17 Masters finals on clay. He's 10 and 7 in those 17 finals. He's beaten Rafa on 4 different occasions. He's also beaten Federer, Murray, Wawrinka, Tsitsipas, and then Schwartzman last year in Rome. I mean, I'm not saying he's underrated, because it's impossible to say Novak Djokovic is underrated in anything, but it's just worth remembering, in terms of the all-time greats on clay, the only reason Novak Djokovic is probably the second best player in men's tennis history on a clay court. If you're going to say, well, what about Bjorn Borg, or like, what about some of those really early open-era guys? I'm not going to argue. Like, I'm not in the... That's not what I'm trying to say. In the modern era, in the post-2000 tennis, like, unequivocally, Novak Djokovic is number 2. And I would argue, even dating back before that, it's just he's had this pesky problem, this guy by the name of Rafael Nadal, or an informed Stan Wawrinka here, or an Andy Murray there, who, you know, have knocked him out late in a clay court event. But this guy is probably the second best player on clay courts in history. And it's because he's one of the few people who can play successful clay court tennis even when put on his back foot. And you look for Djokovic and, you know, in his match today against Jannik Sinner, I mean, he was just so good in the outer thirds of the court. Some of the backhands down the line he hit when he was stretched outside of the alley, you're just like, oh yeah, I forgot Novak Djokovic is the freak of all freak athletes. And, you know, you look for Novak Djokovic in his career, what he's done so well on the clay courts is he's broken serve at an even higher rate than he does on the other surfaces. He's, for his career, I believe, like a 33% break of serve percentage. He's at 35.4. in his career matches on clay, and he just did such a good job against Jannik Sinner's serve of getting the point back to neutral. And of course, it was interesting because Jannik Sinner opened the match with a break, and I promise, I know that was a long tangent on Djokovic to start. I feel like I don't appreciate his greatness frequently enough on this podcast, appreciate any of the Big Three's greatness. And again, why I opened up with that is because I'm not trying to not appreciate their greatness. It's just, what am I going to tell you on a daily basis that you don't already know about them? Anyways, Jannik Sinner is a guy who's going to play explosive tennis, and Djokovic is someone who plays with his food, who takes 3, 4, 5 games to work his way into a match, who may go up an early break to love, but then may drop 4 games in a row, or is known to you know, play a loose early service game, or perhaps he's going for some shots early, just trying to find his range. A couple of plus one errors pile up, and that's exactly what happened to him against Jannik Sinner today, who came out swinging, as you need to do when you're playing Novak Djokovic. And of course, for Jannik Sinner, still so early, in his clay court career, but he was a guy who made the quarterfinals of the French Open last season. And you look for Jannik Sinner, who, by the way, his total career, he's still played fewer than 200 matches. He's at 167 thus far. You look at the ATP level, he's only played 67 total matches on clay. He's played under 20. He's 11-8 in his career at the ATP level on clay court matches. Again, that includes a Roland Garros quarterfinal last year. It was a three-set loss to Dimitrov in the Rome Masters round of 16. Prior to that, round of 16 loss to Laszlo Djere in Kitzbühel, but Djere, one of the more undervalued clay court players on tour right now. The point being, you know, Jannik Sinner is still trying to find his range, and I think, you know, he's so used to being able to hit through every court he plays on and every opponent he plays against. And, you know, Novak Djokovic started responding, you know, after going down an early break, breaks him right back to get back on serve 4-1-2 and just continued to find answers throughout the course of the first set. He worked in the drop shot so frequently and with such success. And it's because Sinner did end up playing 3, 4, 5 feet behind the baseline, just wanted to get clean rips at the ball, trying to, you know, keep moving Djokovic side to side. And he did do a good job of moving Djokovic side to side, but he just ultimately could not hit through these courts. And, you know, Djokovic would either hit the big backhand down the center of the court to just get things back to neutral, and then from there take control of the rally. Or, you know, for Djokovic, he did such a good job, as he always does, of changing direction, not letting Jannik Sinner set his feet, not letting Jannik Sinner camp on one side of the court. Because if you let Jannik Sinner get a clean rip on the ball, as he did on many different occasions in this match, it doesn't matter who you are, he's still going to be able to hit a winner. But for Sinner, you know, the concerning thing, yes, it's against Djokovic, but he was 36 of 73 overall on his service points. So he only won 49% of his points on serve in this match. And again, that's a testament to Djokovic's ability to get the point back to neutral with his return of serve. It does feel particularly effective on clay, just given the depth of his return. But I mean, the big thing for Djokovic today, the first serve, you know, he was landing a high number of first serves. He was moving extraordinarily well around the court. Physically, he seemed locked in. The drop shot, again, was working for him. He, you know, he goes up 5-3, serves for that, what was it, the first set, gets broken by Sinner 4-4-5, but then breaks Sinner right back to close out the 6-4 set. Kind of coast, gets the early break, coast in that second set 6-2. He was a notch above Jannik Sinner, and Jannik Sinner has been he's top 20 in the world now, but he really has been a top 15, maybe even top 10 player here by ELO rating at Tennis Abstract. He's a top 10 guy over these past 52 weeks. And Djokovic was still just on another planet than him. So for Novak Djokovic, he looked fully in command, moved the ball around the court so well. You know, he's got another deep run in Monte Carlo with him, and he enters the clay court season and just, he's 10-0 now. It's another 10-0 start. I think it's like the sixth time in his career he's won his first 10 matches to start a season, and I know 10's not a huge number, but that's crazy. It's a testament to how consistently excellent Novak Djokovic is, just another notch in his record book belt. Djokovic, with the victory over Jannik Sinner, he advances to the round of 16, where now he's going to take on Dan Evans, as Dan Evans, a straight set victory over Hoopy Hercats. We'll get back to that momentarily. I do want to talk about the Rafael Nadal match quickly. There's not much you can learn from a first-round Rafael Nadal match on clay. I don't think he's lost. I want to see, can I look that up? How many matches has Rafael Nadal lost on clay? I think I can look that up on Tennis Abstract. I'm going to try and click and talk as I do that. But look, Delbonis, lefty, always going to have solid results on clay. He made a bunch of challenger runs on the clay courts at the end of last season. You know, he's a guy who has made a bunch of deep runs at ATP levels on clay courts throughout his career. But, you know, does he have a weapon to hurt Rafael Nadal? Unfortunately, the answer to that question is probably no. And watching Nadal today, and it's a 1-2 victory for him over the qualifier Delbonis. I mean, Nadal let's see, he won, made 64% of his first serves, won 73% of those points, 58% of his second serve points, saved four of the five break points he faced, converted five of the 11 break point chances he had, won 57% of his return points in total. He was just in control of every rally in this match. And what makes Nadal so effective on clay is that he always has you on your back foot. His ability to move the ball around and on that forehand wing, we all know the pattern. He's going to go, you know, inside out to try and bait you to attack his on-the-run forehand. Then he's going to go cross-court, down the line, inside out, inside in. You know what he's going to do, and he's so effective with it. Continues to look better and better as a volleyer. He was dominant today, and you look for Rafael Nadal now, 19-5 in his last 52. He's Rafa freaking Nadal. And you look, let's see, all ATP-level matches, time span, his career. He has played far too many matches, so it's going to take the tennis abstract machine a hot second. He's played over 1,200 matches in his career. You look on clay specifically, Rafa. This is ridiculous. What? He's 446-40. He has been playing ATP-level clay court matches since 2002. So it's been 19 years of matches. He's only lost 40 times at the ATP level on clay courts. That's your stat of the day, folks. That's freaking ridiculous. It's a 92% win percentage. You look for him. Let's see. Rafael Nadal round. Round of 128 is only happens at French Opens. Let's see. Round of 64. The last time. Nope. Rafael Nadal 24-0 in round of 64 matches on clay. Let's look. Round of 32. He's 95-3 in round of 32 matches. Here are the three losses. He lost to Alex Courtia, round of 32, Barcelona 2003. He was 16 years old at the time. He lost to Fernando Gonzalez, Stuttgart, round of 32, 2003. He was also, again, 17 years old at the time. And then he lost to Juan Carlos Ferrero, 2008, round of 32. That was a 5-1 match. Again, 2008, he was 22 years old or 21 years old at the time. You're going to say, what about the Granollers match he pulled out of the French Open back in 2016? That doesn't count. His last actual loss in a round of 32 match. Unfreaking believable to think again that it was all the way back in Rome 2008. But yeah, Rafa doesn't lose first round matches. It's not even worth gambling on him because his odds are always minus 1500 or higher. But that's about as sure of a bet as you're going to get. And yeah, he rocked and rolled into the next round, is this his round of 16 match? Let me see here. Is this considered for Rafa? No, this was his round of 32 match. So now he rolls into the round of 16. In terms of the top eight seeds, only one of them upset on the day. And, you know, degrees of upset, I would say yes, this is an upset considering Diego Schwartzman made semifinals French Open last year, made that deep run at the Rome Masters as well, but he loses to a guy in Casper Ruud who we have circled here and talked about repeatedly. He's a guy who's going to have runs here during the clay court season. You look for Ruud, currently ranked, I want to say, Casper Ruud right now in the live rankings, he is currently at number 26. Two off of the career high of number 24 for the 22-year-old. You look for him in his career now. Casper Ruud, 128-75 in his career on clay court matches, 49-26 in his career on clay court matches at the ATP level. So that's, you know, a 65% win percentage for him in clay court ATP level matches compared to a 38% win percentage for him in hard court matches. And, you know, the big thing, he's a guy with a big forehand backswing, and he hits a heavy forehand. That forehand absolutely explodes through these clay courts. It's not quite Rafa, obviously. It's disingenuous to compare anyone to Rafa, but it's that sort of forehand where he just has his opponent on his back foot, where he can get his weight behind the ball. He does such a good job of changing direction with that shot, inside in, inside out, short angle, down the line, playing defense on the run. He can do everything with that forehand wing. And, you know, the thing is, on a hard hard court, a big serve to that wing, he's probably got to hit a slice return. On clay, that's not the case. And you look for his returning numbers in ATP level matches. He wins 33.9% of his return points on hard courts, 38.5% of them on clay courts. He breaks 17% of the time on hard courts. He breaks 27% of the time on clay courts. And obviously, total points won, 49% on hard courts, 52% on clay courts in his matches. Just that additional moment of time affords him a little bit extra, that extra half second to have the bigger backswing. And I think his ability, in particular today against Schwartzman, he did a really good job of elevating his backhand over the net, focusing more on depth than pace, and just getting that ball high on the body of Diego Schwartzman. And Schwartzman didn't have a weapon to hurt him today. And that's a testament to how well Rude moves on the surface, slides into his shots, can change directions, and, you know, it's comfortable hitting the big kick serve out wide on the ad, but also hitting the big slice serve on the deuce. And when you can play to the outside corners on your serve on a clay court, you just have so much open space. And, you know, if you play to that open space, the returner's got to run completely across the court. And then that next shot, it's not just a plus one ball, it's really plus two shot, because then, you know, you have things open to you. You can hit behind your opponent, you can hit to the open space again and make them hit two ridiculous passing shots. It's just Casper Ruud knows how to open up space for himself so well on the court. And clay courts are where that sort of game style thrives. He's, again, got that sort of forehand to work through the court as well. The backhand's far more than a placeholder. He can do a lot of different things with it. Made a ton of returns in play today. Again, Schwartzman didn't really have a big weapon to hurt him with, and as such started forcing things from the baseline. The unforced errors started to pile up. Ruud only faced one break point on the day, and he was able to save it. So a fantastic performance from the 22-year-old. Again, justified advancing here to the round of 16 in Monte Carlo. And that shouldn't shock anyone considering, and I said this before, but last year, his clay court results, he made finals in, or he won the title in Buenos Aires, made the final in Santiago before the pandemic. He then goes Rome semifinals, Hamburg semifinals, Roland Garros third round, losses to Djokovic, Rublev, and Thiem respectively. Yeah, this is a guy who's going to make noise. And I know Schwartzman was, again, is certainly still someone to circle this clay court season. I'm not worried about Diego Schwartzman, but this confirms my belief that Casper Ruud is not to be trifled with and is not a guy you want to see in the draw here throughout the clay court season. And just quickly, Tennis Abstract's clay court ELO, Casper Ruud, let's see, 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 13, the number 14 player in the world by clay court ELO rating, which again measures who you're playing on clay court specifically as opposed to a top 30 player via his ATP ranking. But, you know, again, that's the only top 8 seed to be knocked off, Casper Ruud taking out Diego Schwartzman. In terms of your other top seeds, we try to avoid talking about him. I'm telling you, don't be surprised if Alex Zverev pencil him into the quarterfinals of Roland Garros right now. It's just, you know, Lorenzo Sonego has looked so good, and the reason he's looked so good, his ability to play plus one tennis, and when he takes control of points, you're at his mercy because he'll go big down the line, go big cross court, mix in the drop shot, move forward. But Zverev didn't allow him to do that because Zverev neutralized his biggest strength, his serve. He took that away from him, didn't allow Sonego to play plus one ball, and, you know, Zverev protected his serve well today. 3-3 victory for him. Rublev crushed Caruso. Andrei Rublev, clay might sneakily be the surface I like him most on just because his movement continues to get better and better, and to hit the ball that heavy, that powerfully, with that depth on clay courts, it's just a nightmare to deal with. And so straight set victory for him. Really nice victory for Robbie Batts, 3-4 over Tommy Paul. Two early breaks and then held on to those breaks in both sets. I thought Tommy played really well. Again, this result has more to do with how in form Roberto Bautista Agut is right now. Tommy's going to make some noise here. He's going to get a sneaky victory, make a quarterfinal, semifinal run at one of these clay court events. Unfortunately, it's just not going to be this week. Robbie Batts locked in, physically locked in, mentally. The game looks great as well. He advances in straight sets. Some other guys who have continued their good form of late. Excuse me, I'm so excited about this tennis. Pablo Carreño Busta, title winner last week. Doesn't seem phased physically. 2-3 victory for him over Karen Khachanov. Christian Garin follows up a great victory over Felix Auger-Aliassime with a dominant 6-1, 6-4 victory over John Millman. You also had a nice follow-up performance from Grigor Dimitrov today. Beats Struff round one, beats Jeremy Chardy round two. Your other winners, Goffin, 4-love over Marco Cecinato. Fabio Fognini continues to look good here. He's defending championship points, folks. I'm going to mention that all week because if you see an inspired and locked-in Fabio Fognini, that's always a dangerous one. Don't be surprised if that's the case this week. Straight set victory for him over Jordan Thompson. You also had Krajinovic, straight set win over Juan Ignacio Landero. Luca Puy, best win for him since he's returned to the tours. Dealt with so many injuries over the past 15, really 24 months, but three-set win over a very much in-form Alexei Popperin for him to advance to the round of 16. The only other match I've yet to mention, Dan Evans, 4-1 over Hubi Hurkacz. I mean, Evans was just throwing junk at him all match, backhand slice, going in, you know, forcing Hurkacz to play on his back foot. And Hurkacz just didn't have the answers today. He looked uncomfortable, you know. You look for the match, he was only winning like 52% of his first of his serving points. He only won 7 points on his return in the match. And that's a testament to Dan Evans, who was 31 of 39 on first serves, 28 of 31 on first serve points. I mean, that's just high percentage tennis. Evans served well, didn't give Hurkacz many chances to attack, and just kept him off balance. And again, this win has more to do with Dan Evans playing really well this week, in my opinion, than it did with Hubi Hurkacz, but certainly that's a concerning number that Hubi lost 9. You know, you should never win only 7 points on your return in any match you're playing, unless you're, I guess, playing the primest of primes, like Isner, who's just on a grass court and not missing anything. Certainly on a clay court, to win only 7 return points, that's a little bit scary if you're Hubi Hurkacz. But credit to Dan Evans, who had the goods today, and he advances to the round of 16. That was your Wednesday action in Monte Carlo. In terms of what we've got scheduled on Thursday, round of 16 matches galore, all 8 on the docket. I'll read through them now. I don't want to preview, you know, if I preview all of them, again, this podcast will go back to back. The fact that I went over an hour yesterday was truly shocking. Super producer Daniel Westhoff was like, really? Like, you talked for an hour straight by yourself? And then he looked at me and he's like, actually, that's not surprising at all. Anyways, you look at the matchups up and down the board, there's not a single one I'm not excited for. I mean, let's start at the top. Tsitsipas, Christian Garin. That could be a round of 16 match at the French Open. Maybe even a quarterfinal match, depending on how the draws break. Garin's got the big serve, the big forehand to hit into the Tsitsipas backhand, give him troubles. But Tsitsipas moves really well on the clay courts. And again, I mentioned this stat yesterday. His ability to play 5 foot, you know, 5-6 feet back on his return of serve, take a more defensive posture, allows him more time to swing through his backhand return and, you know, neutralizes the weapon of the serve attacking that backhand. That said, if he offers space, if he offers balls in the center, Christian Garin moves the ball around the court so well. That forehand, absolutely a weapon. That backhand stays low on these clay courts. He'll throw slices into your body. He'll throw big kick serves out wide. And, you know, he's one, you know, him. It's the 5 title club. There are 10 guys under the age of 30 on the ATP Tour with 5 titles. At least 5 titles. Tsitsipas and Garin both on that list. This is going to be a fun one, folks. If Tsitsipas handles him with ease, now he starts joining the conversation of, oh man, that's a guy who could win the French Open. If Garin beats Tsitsipas, then expect every person you know to say, I think Christian Garin can make the round of 16 of the French Open, and try and pass that off as like some sort of sleeper take, when in fact that's not a sleeper take. Mathematically, if you watch, you know, via the stats, or if you watch tennis every week, that's something that could very much happen, all depending on how the draw breaks out. But that's definitely the match of the day. Djokovic Evans is going to be fun, although again, on a clay court, you definitely favor Djokovic in that one. Nadal Dimitrov, sort of a worst case scenario matchup for Dimitrov, particularly given the surface. Andre Rublev versus Robbie Bats is going to be fun. We've seen them battle so many times on hard courts, it feels like, of late. On the clay, you probably like Rublev that much more just because he'll have that extra half second of time, and it's a little bit difficult for RBA to hit through a clay court. Rublev will hit through any court with that sort of forehand. Plus, he's been so successful on clay over the past 52 weeks. He's been successful in everything he's done. But, again, it's a physical test, and that should be a really fun match. No secrets between those two at this point. In terms of your matches not happening on center court, still a fantastic set. You know, Davidovich-Fokina going to take on Luca Puy. That match promises to be athletic. How much does Puy have left in the tank after a rough physical three-setter today against Popperin? Davidovich-Fokina, not a guy you want to play when you have dead legs because he's going to make you frustrated mentally. And, of course, once you start getting frustrated physically, you start to go away. Anyways, that should be a fun one. I would lean Davidovich-Fokina there. Zverev-Goffin is going to be pretty tennis. Krajinovic-Fognini, a little less pretty, still going to be fun. And then Kasparud-Pablo Carreño Busta, give me 2.5 hours in that match. It's going to get physical. It's going to get fun. Should be a spectacular Thursday in Monte Carlo. Hey, Cracked fans. As winter slowly turns into spring and all of us look forward to getting back on the outdoor tennis courts, we here at Cracked Rackets want to ensure that you listeners have everything you need to make sure your return to outdoor tennis is a successful one. That's where our friends at Gamma Sports come in. Now, if you need new strings, new grips, new court equipment, ball hoppers, machine tools, and accessories, whatever it may be, our friends at Gamma have it all for you. They've also, of course, got dampeners, overgrips, replacement grips. They've got it all. And if you go to their website, gammasports.com/tennis, right now, you use our promo code CRACK20, you'll get 20% off your order. Now, I know Gamma has a new string pattern in the queue called the React Pro, which all of you Gamma String users will enjoy. And even if you're not using Gamma Strings, maybe now's the time to start. But they've also got polyesters, everything you could be looking for from a tennis equipment standpoint, all in one location. Just go to gammasports.com/tennis right now. Use that promo code CRACK20 to get 20% off your order. Again, gammasports.com/tennis. Use that promo code CRACK20 to get 20% off your order.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Let's talk now about the action we saw Wednesday in Charleston. Only 4 singles matches to recap first half of our round of 16 in the books. Want to start with Clara Tauson, the former world junior number one, whose big breakthrough result at the WTA level happened last year at the French Open. She came through qualifying, knocked off Jennifer Brady 9-7 in the third set before losing to Danielle Collins. She then goes on to win a first WTA level title earlier this season in Lyon, up to number 101 currently in the rankings, cracked the top 100 earlier in March for the first time in her career. She earns one of the victories, I would say, of her early career as she knocks off Alia Tamjanovic 6-1, 6-4 today to advance to the quarterfinals in Charleston. Crazy to think, given how much success she has had, and she's 43-10 over her last 52 weeks. You look for Tauson now since the start of the 2020 season. She's made 5 finals, won all 5 of them, so 5 different titles, 4 of them at the ITF level, obviously one of them happening on the indoor hard court. She's also won titles on hard courts, carpets, carpet and clay. I mentioned that 43-10 result, the 43-10 over her last 52 weeks. Despite all that success, you know, in her career, she still only played 5 WTA level matches, and during her career, she still only played 7 WTA level matches. She's 17-6 in those WTA level matches. In clay specifically, she's now 8-3 in her career. And I mean, you just look overall in her career, regardless of the level of play she's had, she's won 15-31. She's won 79% of her matches to start her career. And you know, the success has translated across surface. She's just got firepower that can hit through any court. And today against Tomjanovic in the first set, she came out firing. And in particular, if you haven't seen Clara Tauson play, her backhand down the line, it's not good. It's not great. It's elite. And it's elite already. And she hit three down-the-line backhand winners in the very first game of the match to sort of set the tone. And she just took it to Tomjanovic, who's a fantastic litmus test of what it takes to be a top 50 player in the women's game right now. Tomjanovic moves really well. She's solid off of both wings. She can turn defense into offense. She can absorb and redirect pace. Can't manufacture as much pace as a Clara Tauson, but she's going to make you work. And she took a 4-1 break of serve lead in the second set. But, I mean, if you give Clara Tauson a clean look at the ball, more likely than not, she's going to hit a winner or put herself in a winning position within the point. And on these clay courts, and she's got a big forehand backswing and an extreme grip, but on these clay courts, she has an extra half second and allows her to turn into that ball. She can go down the line, cross court, short angle. She can throw it 20 feet in the air to play a little defense, buy herself some time to reset her feet in the center of the court. She's just an absolute stud. And I mean, she puts a ton of returns in the court. She can make them, you know, she plays aggressively with them as well. She took it to Tomjanovic. Tomjanovic didn't have big enough weapons to hit Tauson off of her spot. And I will continue to say the biggest concern for Tauson right now is when you can get her on her back foot, she's not as good at defense as she is on offense. She's not as good when she's on her back foot. But the moment you hit her a ball in the center, she's going to turn that defense into offense. She's going to take control of the point. That's what she did against Tomjanovic. And I mean, you look for Alia Tomjanovic right now, 27 years old in May, number 77 in the world, but has been a top 50 player for a few years now. You know, she's played some pretty good ball as well of late, and yet she just didn't have weapons big enough to hit Tauson off of her spot. This speaks to, again, between Tauson and, Maria Serrano Campos and just all of the players you see right now within the women's game just continuing week in, week out to make these rises. It was, Fruvertova yesterday, the 15-year-old. I mean, it's crazy. And Clara Tauson belongs not just on that list, but probably near the top of the list. You look for her now. She's back into, I believe, in the live rankings, back up to a new career high of number 96 with this quarterfinal here. With a win tomorrow, she'll be up into a new career high inside the top, I believe, 90 of the WTA rankings. She's the sixth highest player in the world, ranked player in the world under the age of 20, under the age of 19. She's the fourth highest ranked player. It goes Goff at 35, Fernandez 72, Kostyuk 85, and then Tauson 96. And it feels like we've just begun to scratch the surface of her potential, of her talent as well. Fantastic result for Clara Tauson here today. Saved 9 of the 10 break points she faced. Was, you know, won 66% of her first serves, 55% of her second serve points. Actually won over 50% of Alia Tomjanovic's first serve points and won 48% of her return points in total. She was just, again, the aggressor. She went down that early break in the second set, was down 4-1, could have very easily thrown that set away, but got the break back for, holds a tricky hold for her, but ends up holding 4-2-4, gets the break back after facing a break point for, I think, 3-4 or 4-all, and then, you know, faced some break points herself, trying to serve out the match up 5-4, but just swings through her issues and plays on her terms. And for an 18-year-old, there could be no more exciting trait to see. So a fantastic result for Clara Tauson. She's into another WTA level quarterfinal. In terms of the other result I want to break down quickly from Charleston, Shelby Rogers, who I said at the beginning of the week should shock no one if you see Rogers go on to win this event in Charleston. It was a 2-2 victory for her over Claire Liu. Her pace, her power just kind of overwhelmed Liu, in particular the Liu forehand. It just, you know, and on clay, that's where Liu's, she's got a little hitch in her forehand, but that's usually where she plays her best tennis. And she did play really well today. There were some long extended rallies in this match, but just that heavy topspin, that +1 power for Shelby Rogers, a little bit too much in the end. But I made this point earlier. I just want to reiterate it. For her career, Shelby Rogers overall, and we'll just go in total, she is 213 and 187, so she's won 53% of her matches in her career. On hard court, she's 135 and 111. That's a 55% win percentage. On clay, she's sneaky good as well. 70 and 61, that's a 53% win percentage. You want to do it in WTA level events only. She's 36 and 32, but you look for her now over the past few results. Last week in Charleston, she beat Mladenovic. She beats Anisimova before losing to 3 in Barty here. She's beaten McNally and Liu. Going to have a tough test tomorrow physically against Danka Kvinic, who, of course, was a finalist last week, back into the quarterfinals now as she earned a three-set win today in a physical match over Lauren Davis. But I just... Shelby's power just works regardless of court, and I've mentioned this for the men, and it applies again here. It's really hard to play scrambling on your back foot tennis on a clay court, and Shelby Rogers forces you to play on your back foot. She's going to go for her shots, and some days she misses. Some days, the range is a little bit off, but of late, I mentioned it, 24 and 11 since the tour restarted in August. She's a top 40 player, maybe even higher than that, and does have the sort of firepower to compete with anyone on her best day. Fantastic performance for her, 2-2. She just, a 2-2 win over Claire Liu is the win, is the form and the sort of victory you get when you're a top 50, top 40 even player. So a great result for her to advance to the quarterfinals. I mentioned Danka Kvinic. She continues to roll in Charleston. 6-1, 1-6, 6-3 victory for her over Lauren Davis. And then now Hibino, a 6-4, 6-3 victory over former Ohio State All-American Francesco Di Lorenzo to advance to the quarterfinals. In terms of the matches we're going to have tomorrow in Charleston, it's going to be all, I believe, your other half of the round of 16. You've got Christina McHale taking on Maria Camila Osorio Serrano, Bogota champion, 2019 Junior U.S. Open champion, former world junior number one, who's just already knocked out it was the number two seed here this week, Magda Linette. So she's going to look to continue her run. Own Jabeur, your number one seed, taking on Alicia Parks. You've also got Madison Brangle versus Astra Sharma. Emma Navarro in the nightcap taking on Linda Fruvertova. Promises to be a fun day of action in Charleston.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
I mentioned those are your two ATP and WTA level events happening this week. I want to talk quickly now here about some of the action we saw at the challenger level. And again, to hear a complete challenger recap, go check out our Great Shot podcast feed. David Gertler joins me. I don't want to step on that podcast completely, but I do want to talk about Brandon Nakashima, the talented young American, making the decision this week to go and play the red clay challengers in Europe as opposed to staying comfortable in America, going down to Orlando, where he certainly would have gotten into the draw and would have had the chance to play that event. But you look for Brandon Nakashima in his young career, and for the 19-year-old, already up to number 142 in the rankings, has had so much success over his last 52 weeks, and really since he entered the pro circuit coming off of his one season at the University of Virginia in 2019. You look for him in 2020. He goes 28 and 14 overall during that 2020 season. He ends up winning the first challenger of his career to end the year in Orlando, right? So makes the decision for him to not play that event even more pressing because he's already been there, done that, or I suppose more surprising because he's had success there. So why not go rack up another challenger success? But, he won another challenger title earlier this year indoors at the end of January. So we know what he can do on hard courts. He's had success repeatedly at the challenger level. You look for Nakashima in his career, and again, he's only 19 years old. He's 41-16 in challenger level matches on hard court. That's a 72% win percentage. That's a guy who's probably ready to start sniffing around the ATP level on hard courts. But you look for his career on clay. A lot more intrigue, a lot more mystery surrounding those results. He's 6-5 in his career, regardless of level of play on clay. Now, all of those matches have come at the challenger level or higher, and you look for him. They've all actually come since last fall, 2020, the first fall he played a fall of clay court matches. But you know, his victories he's gotten here in Belgrade, only the second time in his career, he's won multiple matches at a clay court event, and the first time in his career he's advanced past the first second round of a clay court event. Yeah, this is Brandon Nakashima's first quarterfinal on clay of his career at the professional level. And, you know, he worked Hugo Delian today. And I'm going to say it, I was wrong. I thought Brandon might struggle with his movement on clay. He didn't. He looked fluid. And, you know, much like Casper Ruud and, you know, I talked about these guys and these girls earlier, his ability to move the ball around the court, to go down the line, cross court, down the line, cross court, just to hit the ball where you're not, it's an invaluable skill on clay courts. And you watch him, he looks stronger. He looks faster. He was hitting that that forehand with a little more oomph in his match today. Again, a 2-2 victory over Hugo Delian, who did not play his best tennis, but, you know, Brandon's backhand's never going to struggle. You watch it for 2 seconds, so fluid, the drive, the pace, the depth, just everything on that wing. He can hit all the shots, but his ability to really hit through, in particular for me, was the inside-in forehand that he used as a weapon today to keep Delian honest, to attack that wing. It hit through the court, and it's still not, you know, it'll still sit up a little bit, and I do wonder against a big server, how does his ground strokes hold up? But, you know, as I mentioned with Casper Ruud, Nakashima will hit that big slicer to out wide and then play the plus one ball to the open court. On the ad side, he'll hit the big kick serve out wide and then play the plus one ball to the open court. He'll also hit big down the tee. He'll hit big kicks. He'll hit flat into your body. He'll, you know, he's looking better and better as a volleyer as well. I'm just so impressed by his continued development, by his decision making. I love the fact that he went and challenged himself, got out of his comfort zone, and that decision's paying dividends now as he earns again his first quarterfinal in his professional career on clay. That was the big thing I wanted to touch on. Just, I suppose, if you want to hear your round of 16 winners thus far in Belgrade, Kovalik, Liam Brody, Blaz Rola, the former Ohio State NCAA singles champion who was a title winner last week, we talk about extensively in the Great Shot podcast. You also have Nakashima, Daniel, Zumher, Bagnis, Carbeas Bena, Trungaletti, Bagnis, Zumher, Daniel, and Nakashima. Not Trungaletti. Trungaletti, unfortunately, lost his match to Carbeas Bena, but those were your winners in Belgrade. In terms of the action happening elsewhere on the Challenger Tour, we have the return of Mike Cation, of course. Ooh, by the way, a shout out to Liam Brody, who's now 33-14 in his last 52 weeks. We talk about him extensively on the podcast as well. He's clearly playing the best tennis of his career. If it's going to happen for Liam Brody, it's going to happen right now. But that's your action in Belgrade. In terms of tomorrow, we've got quarterfinals. You've got Carbeas Bena versus Rola, Daniel versus Zumher, Brody versus Nakashima, and Kovalik versus Bagnis. And by the way, I kind of love that matchup for Nakashima, so he may end up making his first semifinal at the professional level on clay this week as well. That's one to watch, certainly, throughout the day. But going to rapid-fire through Orlando. We only had 4 singles results on the day. Braden Schnurr knocks off an in-form Bjorn Fratangelo, 6-3, 7-6. These courts are playing fast in Orlando, and Schnurr, big serve, big forehand, comfortable moving forward. He has taken advantage of the conditions. young American wild card Zane Khan, who, you know, still very early in his career. Khan only 18 or just turned 19 years old, currently number 615 in the world, but advances to his first quarterfinal at the challenger level. He's knocked off Kevin King and now number two seed Yasutaka Uchiyama 7-6, 7-6 for Khan. 21-9 in his last 52 weeks. You look at what accomplishments he's achieved during that time. He's won two futures titles and made another future final all during the month of March. You watch him play for 2 seconds, ball absolutely explodes off of his racket. I tweeted about him in the last challenger in Orlando last year, and you look for him now. I think he's like 2-6 in, or excuse me, 3-5 in his challenger matches in his career. He's only played 8 of them, and it's still so early, but he's got the firepower, and that's half the, you know, that's half the battle. Do you have the weapons to someday make it? You can learn how to play tennis, but do you have the actual physical skill set to make it as a tennis player? The answer for young Zane Khan is yes. And again, I want to see more, but I'm very intrigued because it only takes 3 seconds to see how much talent that guy has. I also feel the same way about Jensen Brooksby, who just continues to rock and roll. Jensen now into another challenger quarterfinal as he knocks off an in-form Eltuk Çelikbelek 3-1. He's now 14-7 in his career in challenger matches, but 11-2 so far this season. It's gone first round loss to Cem Ilkel in South Africa, but he got his revenge by beating Ilkel in the quarterfinals the next week on his run to his first challenger title in South Africa. Then makes the final in Cleveland. Now quarterfinals here in Orlando. Hasn't dropped a set yet this week. He's, you know, making 65% of his first serves as he always does, playing high percentage tennis, putting so many balls in the court. He's a stud, and he continues to rock and roll. He advances. Then Roberto Cid, similarly, such a tough out physically. 6-2 victory for him over number 4 seed Thiago Sapeth Vild to advance to the quarterfinals. Tomorrow in Orlando, you get the second half of the round of 16. Kovacevic going to take on Christian Harrison. Dennis Kudla taking on Tim Van Rijevin, big server. Big server and Chris Eubanks going to take on Michael Moe, and then Pranesh Gunaswara taking on Jack Sock. Tons of fun doubles action, by the way, throughout the day in Orlando. So at some point, be sure to go check out the broadcast. Mike Cation and the crew, best in the business. So certainly we all can enjoy that. Speaking of Cem Ilkel, by the way, he advanced to the quarterfinals today of the challenger in Croatia this week. 7-6 in the third win over number 3 seed Hugo Gaston. Your other winners in Croatia advancing to the quarterfinals: Matthias Borg, Elias Imer, and then Tanasi Kokkinakis, who now, I believe that's back-to-back quarterfinals for him on these clay court challengers in Croatia. Last week, he got wins over Horansky and the week before's winner, Zdenek Kolar, before losing to Kasper Zouk. This week, it's wins over Adjukovic and Horansky again to reach the quarterfinal. Quietly, Tanasi Kokkinakis in his career, 13-4. In clay court challenger events. I made this exact, you know what, we talk about him in the challenger podcast, so I'm going to leave so all of the rest of the fun facts. That's what we in the business call a tease, folks, but always worth noting his performances. He advanced because we know he, if healthy, he belongs in the top 60, maybe top 50 of the ATP rankings. His serve, his forehand, his ability to just find ways to win matches, his competitive spirit. I know that's a non-quantifiable thing, but it exists for Kokkinakis. We just hope he can be healthy, because if so, he'll work his way back into the top 50 of the ATP rankings. But tomorrow's the second half of the round of 16, and boy, do I like these matches. Kasper Zouk taking on Max Marderer. Pedro Cashin taking on Quinton Halys. Cashin, your winner last week over Nuno Borges at the Portugal Challenger. Vukic taking on Zdenek Kolar, and then Mirza Basic taking on Andrea Colarini. So it should be a very fun day of tennis on Thursday. Of course, again, I just went through a challenger section, just plugged it a million times. If you want to hear more about the Challenger Tour action, or perhaps you want to hear more about the college tennis world, you can hear about both of those topics on our Great Shot podcast feed. Chris Halliors and Matt Stachowiak joining me on Wednesday to talk college. And by the way, speaking of which, Thursday night, Chris Hallior is going to be joining me as well for a webinar discussing all things ITA college rankings, the mechanics behind the formula, the mechanics behind collegetennisranks.com, how it all works. That's a public forum open to coaches, players, listeners of this podcast. You can find more details in the links we've posted on social media or on our website, crackedrackets.com. Also, super excited for our final Red Zone broadcast of the season. We're going to be broadcasting both the men's and women's USC-UCLA matches on Friday. Sunday, we get the Wolverines and the Buckeyes in a battle for the Big Ten title in their regular season finale. So be sure to check out coverage. Friday starts 4:15 p.m. Eastern time. Coverage Sunday, 11:45 a.m. Eastern time. Really excited for these broadcasts, as it is really the home stretch of this 2021 college tennis season. So hopefully you all will join us. But again, if you need anything else to catch up on the tennis action happening in the tennis world, you can find it all on our website, crackedrackets.com. Like, rate, subscribe, review to this podcast, the Great Shot Podcast, Cracked Interviews Podcast, and everything we're doing here at Cracked Rackets. You need the more immediate updates: Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube. We are at Cracked Rackets. You want to message me directly, I am at Great Shot Pod. Shout out, as always, to our super producers, Max Fliegen and Daniel Westhoff, for the of an editing job they do day in, day out. Shout out as well to our friends at Midwest Sports. Go to MidwestSports.com. Use that promo code CR15. With that in mind, for our super producers, Fliegner and Westhoff, our friends at Midwest Sports, and all of us here at both Cracked Rackets and the Tennis Channel Podcast Network, I'm your host, Alex Gruskin. You know what we say. That's the break. We'll see you all tomorrow. Thanks, everyone. We'll be right back.